Well, you can say hi if you want to.
Hi, this is
Howdy.
Hi. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Greg LeMond. Welcome to the VeloCast.
That's nice, really nice, yeah.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the VeloCast. In a change to, well, if not our advertised programming, certainly our anticipated programming, we'll be coming to you immediately following the trio of races, which from the build-up to this weekend's Giro di Lombardia, the first of which, today's Tre Valli Varenzini, was, well, how can I put this politely? Another complete cluster fudge for professional cycling, as a group of favourites followed a TV moto bike down the wrong road at a roundabout as they chased down lone leader Luis Leon Sanchez. And then moments later, the Astana rider was almost taken out by a police bike. However, what today also was another win for Primoz Roglic, who is further staking his claim to be the pre-race favourite for the weekend's Race of the Falling Leaves.
It's a very different Roglic to the one that we saw caught by Rohan Dennis in the World Time Trial Championships, isn't it? I've got to say that was just plain weird today. I thoroughly enjoyed it. You know, we had the early breakaway, we had Gogol Ballerini and Harada up the road, and then we had a really quite elite breakaway ping off the front, and then we had Luis Leon Sanchez attacking, going solo with a strong attack, which it looked like he went capable of making it stick, and then we descended into Monty Python territory.
Cue up the Benny Hill theme music.
A beautiful chasing group forming with some real big hitters, and Luis Leon Sanchez, although he looked strong out front, almost certain to be caught by those guys, and then an ultimate selection coming from some big names, and then they got to a roundabout and kind of went straight on following the moto, who I fully expect the pilot to get a bank transfer from someone called Alexander within the next few days. But there were no marshals. It was absolutely baffling. And I think both myself, and I would imagine you and the commentators who were, you know, commentating the feed on Eurosport, only really realised what had gone on when we saw riders start to randomly U-turn in the middle of the road after really quite a long way. And when they came back, they weren't just more seconds behind Luis Leon Sanchez, they were behind the peloton.
Yeah,
I mean, it was bizarre.
It really was. And you know, in defence of ourselves watching and the commentators, it was kind of confusing as to what was going on, because the cameras were, as they always are, continually switching, and we just saw the kind of the moto feed, and I beg your pardon, the helicopter feed, and a helicopter feed when going through a roundabout isn't really giving you any sense of proportion as to the landscape round about it. And as you say, they never, I mean, it was a good at least 500 metres, if not nearly a kilometre, when they got to really a fork in the road, and everybody went, oh, hang on a minute, this doesn't look right at all, and eventually turned round, which of course leads us to asking the big question, what went wrong there? The TV moto bike took that exit from the roundabout. Now, of course, you could say that he's to blame. You could also say that Davide Formolo was to blame because he was following the camera bike, probably drafting it just to throw up that tired old trope yet again. But really, I think you got to look to the race organisers, because there was no signal on the roundabout. There was nobody there, as there always usually is, and there always has to be, because nobody expects the entire peloton to memorise the entire route. There was just no marshal there to say, no, it's this first exit you need to take, guys.
The bizarre thing for me was, I mean, Luis Leon Sanchez was behind, the actual organisation car, lead comms car with him. They knew where they were going, so all he had to do was follow them. But as far as I could see, there was no signage on the roundabout. And, you know, best practice is really that you have somebody marshalling all of the exits except the one that they're supposed to take, so that it's obvious, even just visually, that there's somebody standing in the middle of an exit. You're not going that way. That exit's clear. You should go, the other way. And you're looking at some amazing riders. We were robbed, actually, of a fantastic finale today. You had people like Alejandro Valverde, and I have to pass comment on that Spanish national champions jersey. It's absolutely beautiful in the movie star colour. players. You had Dan Martin, you had Michael Woods, Damien Goudou, David Formolo, Dylan Toons, Wilco Kelderman. I mean, we're talking absolutely top-class riders who really would have treated us to a fantastic finale. And I don't think it falls on the UCI, much though I enjoy bashing them at every possible opportunity. I don't think it falls on the motopilot, because he had the same confusion as the riders. It falls squarely at the organisers. They should have marshalled it and they should have signed it. And we actually got a great race that finished well, but I think we could have had a better one.
Yeah, I think that's entirely fair, and I'm sure that everybody in that group that did take the wrong road will be very, very upset and angry that they were denied the chance to give us a proper finale. I mean, there are a lot of riders would have been very happy with adding a race like today's to their palmares.
Actually, one of the shots of the day was just Dylan Toon sitting up, spreading his arms and essentially going, what the fuck?
Yeah, right. I mean, he spoke for everybody watching when that gesture came. And then, as I said in the intro, just moments or so later, we saw the erstwhile leader, Luis Leon Sanchez, having to bunny hop over the entrance to... a narrowing of the roads because a police motorbike was trying to overtake one of the organisers' cars and nearly just swiped him completely off the route itself.
It was like classics bingo that moment, wasn't it? You had motor rider going slightly mad, car slightly getting in the way, what looked to me like a level crossing, which is always good value in a classic, less people in, and bunny hopping over a central reservation. And I was just saying to Stephen Schilling, one of our subscribers on social media, I'm really struck this year by the sense of speed in the peloton. I don't know if it's just that I'm ageing or whatever, but they all look really, really quick this year. And at that point, Luis Leon Sanchez was going absolutely hell for leather. We'd seen him descending at terrifying speed, taking the best lines he could through corners, you know, clipping roundabouts to try and get absolutely the last second that he could out of any advantage. And at that point, it was just pure skill that saved him. He managed, using mostly his hips to steer, actually, it's got to be said, to move just enough to miss the moto, take the compression bump at the bottom, because it was downhill with a compression bump where it looked like the rails were to me before he went uphill again, and then keep his momentum going. You know, we saw his teammate, Jakob Fuglsang, have that massive slide when he won a classic earlier this year. This, for me, was right up there with that. That was a big save from LL Sanchez and a mark of really good bike handling.
So from the group which was, I guess, expected to catch Luis Leon Sanchez, we then had a new group chasing him down. And it looked for a wee while that group really wasn't going to get its act together and the Astana man may actually have held on to take the win. But that was before... the work fell to two of the Ineos riders, with Gianni Moscon being their protected man for the day.
Yeah, we saw loads of Ineos work today. Theo Gegenhart was working hard. Eddie Dunbar had been very active. And Moscon, to me, looked like he might have the winning of the race. As you say, that group had been dangling Luis Leon Sanchez off the front for kilometre after kilometre. At one point, the gap was down to, you know, 8 seconds, maybe 10 seconds. It wasn't quite as low as the on-screen timing showed, but it was certainly close, and I was sure he would get caught quickly. And then when they left him dangling, part of me was going, he's actually not the kind of rider that you want to give even a half chance to. You know, he's a classy rider. He could take advantage if you pause. And I thought that pause was happening. We saw them looking at each other. We saw Ineos go to the front in a kind of half-hearted fashion that looked like an attack, but then turned into just a wee bit of a drive. We saw other guys hanging back, not wanting to work in case they, you know, they sacrificed their chances in a finale where they were all sure it was going to come together. And for a wee moment, I thought that Luis Leon Sanchez might hang on. And it was only at one point where he'd been hiding almost from that chasing group behind walls, behind twists in the road, that he looked back and saw how close they were. That it wasn't so much them catching him, because at that point, you know, Moscon was having a big dig and was being covered by the likes of Primoz Roglic. for me, it was almost as much that Lewis Leon at that point went, oh, I've just had enough. You know, I can't handle the stress of hanging out here anymore. And him giving up was almost as big a part of the catch as the likes of Moscone driving forward.
And I have to question, and it may be one that's been formed by what ultimately happened rather than what was the situation at the time, I accept that. But I do have to question Gianni Moscone's tactics in essentially an attack.
That's surprising.
There's a lot to question about Gianni Moscone. Maybe tactics is the least of it, but we'll stick with that for the moment. An attack that actually only managed to bring back the guy who was dangling out front isn't an attack, because you really need to be, when you're inside the Flamme Rouge, you really need to be putting in the attack that seals the race, not just brings back the guy that you've been chasing and forms a neat little group from which you are now arguably the weakest, because the one to profit from it, of course, was Primož Roglič. But I kind of felt there was maybe a bit of tactical naivety from Gianni Moscone.
Oh, absolutely. Moscone, for me, I mean, we talked back in the day when he had the thing with Reichenbach and, you know, he's somewhat racist comments, where I think Moscone is actually as thick as a thick thing's thick bits, you know, two short planks. And I think he's extravagantly strong. Now, when he's on form, we've heard recently about the real struggles he's had with weight gain during the tour, with motivation, with, you know, the type of training he's doing. He's not a happy puppy. But he looks to me like he's getting back that absolutely extraordinary strength that we saw him display when he first joined Team Sky, you know, when he was such an asset to the team. But he never really seems that tactically aware to me. He just thinks, you know, what's going strong, what's going go. And I think that's what we saw today, is he wasn't aware of the people who were with him. He wasn't particularly aware of their strengths and what they would bring to that final 600 metres where we saw Primož Roglič stamp his authority on the race. So effectively, he just worked as a big lead-out man for Primož.
Yeah, I mean, because he was immediately, when he went off in search of Lewis Leon Sanchez, the guy that was immediately on his wheel, and quite rightly too, was Jakob Fuglsang, Sanchez's teammate. And that then brought out, I think it was Pierre Latour, who had been very, very active himself in trying to kind of snap the front of that chase group. But of course, just cruising up behind them was Roglič. And I've also got to ask and maybe say we can perhaps cross our fingers and hope that everybody was just too cooked to follow Roglič, because it would take a special kind of idiocy to have actually had the legs, or maybe just even having your eyes closed at the time, which is immensely ill-advised at a bike race at any point. But that's the only reason why any of those other three would not been aware that Primož Roglič was actually attacking you at that point, because they all just looked at him and said, thanks for joining us, now we'll see you somewhat later at the finish line, because there didn't seem to be any effort to counter the very obvious attack that Roglič was making.
I think they're all crapping themselves with him just now. I mean, we saw his performance at the Dillamelia at the weekend, where he took that iconic climb that we saw at the start of the Giro d'Italia and basically just ripped it apart. I mean, I don't trust the old back of a fag packet wattage calculations, but I've seen people who consistently are pretty close to you know, what I arrive at myself, talking numbers north of 7 watts per kilogram for the kind of power that he was putting out, which is quite extraordinary. And today, for me, it wasn't even that much about tactics. Yes, the others made mistakes, but when he went, even if somebody had tried to counter it, I'm not sure they would have been able to hold his wheel. I mean, he could lose Lombardia because it is such a tactical race. You have to be clever. You have to time everything perfectly. You have to conserve strength during the early climbs and then know just when to commit fully, which is why, you know, Nibali's made it almost his own race in recent years.
Don't get me started.
No, well, we can save that for Saturday. but, you know, Primož Roglič didn't need tactics today. I actually thought earlier in the race that he looked like a man, and I said this about both him and Nibali was subsequently a wee bit active before, you know, taking a wee diversion. And Roglič himself, they looked like people who were waiting for Saturday. You know, they were sitting in the right place in the chasing bunch, but they didn't look like they were that agitated or involved in the race. They were just getting the miles in. But when Roglič committed, he just went, you know. 600 metres to go, turned the pedals, had a gap that almost instantly to me looked like nobody was going to close it down. And the others, I don't know if they were cooked, which is one possibility, because it's nearly 200 kilometres. It's a long, difficult race. They'd had a hard chase to close down LL Sanchez. But for me, it was almost a, oh, Primus is gone. We might as well just sprint for second now. And if that holds for Lombardy on Saturday, he's got to be hot favourite now, hasn't he?
Oh, no, definitely.
And we're only one of the three races this week that I love so much. And the first one, you look at that top 10, other than Andrea Vendrame, who did a fantastic ride to you know, finish well up the top 10. All of those guys are, you know, at worst outsiders for me for Lombardia. It was a really elite group that finished when you consider the folk who went off course.
Mm-hmm. And just to, you know, maybe talk briefly about your point regarding we may as well sprint for second. Well, let's have a look at exactly how that worked out for Gianni Moscon, Jakob Fuglsang and Pierre Latour as I take you through the top 10 for today. Primož Roglič takes the win ahead of Giovanni Visconti. Tom Squeens was in third. Andrea Vendrame was in fourth. Sergio Higuita in fifth. Thijs Benoot in sixth. Christian Spargali in seventh. Theo Gegenhardt in eighth. Damiano Caruso in ninth. And Tim Wellens in 10th. So I think the answer to let's sprint for second was, that didn't work out very well at all, did it?
No, it really didn't. And if you actually look at that, the sprint worked out roughly how you would expect it to.
Yeah.
You know, given the qualities of those riders in the top 10. But I genuinely think there's an element of fear now when they see Primož Roglič go. And the thing about Roglič is he is so relaxed about it. Did you see his post-race interview where he kind of went, oh, yeah, just as with Emilia at the weekend, it was really nice to win, but I'm quite looking forward to my holidays. You know, I mean, that is just, that's Peter Sagan levels of chilled. It's terrifying.
I think the rest of the peloton is looking forward to you going on your holidays as well, Primož. Now, as I said right at the top of the show, we didn't anticipate doing essentially daily shows for these three races. But it was your good self, John, that said, you know what, we both really enjoy doing watching these individual lead-up races to Lombardia, and they are so enjoyable in and of themselves. Let's just go and do some post-race analysis, which will help us look at Lombardia, despite the fact that Primož Roglič is looking head and shoulders above everybody else. So that's why we're here today. We're going to be here again tomorrow and then on Friday. But before we go, a reminder, if indeed you should need one by this point, of our astonishingly well-priced early bird offer.
Yep, $59.90 for all of our content for 2020, including the stuff that we just decide to do in the spur of the moment, as we've had this week. I don't know why we haven't done daily shows from these races before, actually, because I absolutely love them, and every year we talk about them with such fondness, whether it's the scenery or whatever. Anyway, it's the cheapest way you can get all of our content for next year. So many of you have signed up already, and I really need to thank you. It looks like Scott and I will be able to feed baked beans and toast to the families in 2020. If you're thinking about going for the early bird, you've got until the end of October to do it. We always do it during September and October. And all you need to do is visit velocasto.cc and sign up. If you're already an existing subscriber, We appreciate your custom so much. If you log in first to Osound, you won't even need to touch your podcatcher for your coverage to continue next year. The same feed will carry on uninterrupted, so you won't need to do a thing. So velocasto.cc for the early bird offer really helps us plan for next year. It's the cheapest way for you to do it, and it means you can just forget about it for next year and just enjoy all of the Velocasts for 2020.
Well, thank you everyone for joining us today for a brief review of the Tre Valli Varenzini. Join us again tomorrow as the late season races continue in Italy with Milano-Torino in another edition of the Velocast.